back into Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. David Paschal along with Swell Wells Guthrie. Hoping everybody out there is having a wonderful Wednesday. We're having a wonderful Wednesday because we're welcoming back in Barry Abrams, the longtime Press Row horse racing guru. You can check out his tips on Daily Wager on ESPN Plus, and he has a daily one-minute commentary on thoroughbred racing that is daily, called The Far Turn. Barry, welcome back into Chattanooga's Press Row. How are you today?
Excellent, gentlemen. I hope you're safe and healthy.
We are. We are. Wishing you the same as well. All right, let's, before we look at this week, I want to go back to last year and what was obviously a very unique year for all of sports, but especially horse racing when you think about the Triple Crown taking place out of order. You had Tis the Law winning the Belmont. You had Authentic winning the Derby. And then Swiss Skydiver winning the Preakness. You know, you have, Barry, different sports that have kind of, some have taken financial lumps more than others. How would you say horse racing came out of the coronavirus, or and maybe it hasn't completely, but given the brunt of it seems to be in the rearview mirror, how would you say horse racing has come out of it?
Well, most of us are really not out of the woods yet, but racing was set up to succeed, and by and large it did, because you can wager from home. It was the first sport that you could wager on from home before any buddy was legally doing baseball, football, basketball, etc. And so, you know, racing never really shut down for the most part. It shut down for a few weeks in most places. Some never did, like Gulfstream Park in Florida. But, you know, New York, for example, had a huge uptick in the amount of handle it took in, the amount of money it took in. And some of that was because of the broadcasting expansion that they did, but some of it is because for a long time it was the only game in town. It was the only thing that a bettor could get some juice on. So racing actually did pretty well. I mean, everybody was down a little bit, but racing was down a heck of a lot less than most other sports.
Barry, that's interesting because you see, you know, with the NFL and the NHL and the way they're contracted different, when you see empty stands, you know, like the NFL can survive that much more than the NHL can. So you're saying just the, you know, because we talk about gambling and it being legalized all the time on this show, you're saying horse racing has withstood that as much as anything. And I would assume along those lines, the future looks pretty bright.
Well, most of its money is taken in away from the track. Yes, there are people who show up at the track. And certainly on Kentucky Derby Day, there's normally 150,000 people there. There'll be about 25,000 this time. But for most days, it's almost like holding a card in front of no studio audience. Most of the wagering happens online or at least at betting parlors, brick-and-mortar places around the country. So they were set up to still keep those revenue streams going. And in terms of conducting the races, most of the tracks were able to convince their local governments for most of the time, if not all of the time, that they were basically a self-contained city with the horses, the grooms, the hot walkers, the exercise riders, all basically living in dormitories on the back stretch. Effectively, they were a closed ecosystem. The trainers would come and go, and the veterinarians would come and go. But Santa Anita out in California even had very nice plush mobile trailers brought in, and the jockeys would check in on, like they would race, let's say, Thursday through Sunday. They would check in on Thursday, and they would stay in the trailers until Sunday night at the end of the week, and then they would go home. So they were basically self-contained cities, and just about all of them, therefore, were able to convince their local governments to allow the action to happen because the local governments were allowing training in the morning but not racing in the afternoon. And they said it takes more people to train the horses than it does to execute the races. And the governments eventually understood and allowed it to happen.
Barry, you realize we build you up all the time about how knowledgeable you are, and you could just like drool the rest of this interview, and you've already succeeded. You've come through again, once again. But here's my next thing, Barry. Let's fast forward to this week. I'm I'm not even going to pretend that I know anything about it. And we've got listeners all over Chattanooga who are wondering the same thing. I've watched horse racing through the years. I've liked it. I haven't followed anything now. Why should I watch this Saturday's Derby?
Well, there are a lot. First of all, somebody's going to win the biggest race in the country, the Kentucky Derby. That's pretty much the first thing you need to know. And the second thing that you need to know is that for the first time in 2 years, it's happening at the time of year it's supposed to happen. And that allows historical comparisons to everything that's happened before, because horses get older quickly. So the race that happened last September is, of course, an outlier, because horses in the spring, like now, are teenagers, high school, maybe early college. Once you get to September, it's playing in the NFL at that point. So it'd be like playing college football with 8-year NFL veterans. So complete outlier. Now we get back to what this is all about. Horses that are basically playing college football, going at it the way they always have. And there are a lot of horses here who have a lot to prove. The most proven among them is Essential Quality. He will go off as the favorite. He's 5 for 5, has done everything right, not turned a hair the wrong way. If you think he's still got some upside, then you would go for him. Some of us believe we've seen the best of him, but we might not have seen the best of some of the others. And in particular, having watched races at Churchill Downs this week, and they are racing now as we speak, it seems like that on the dirt track, as opposed to the turf course, that it's all about horses who go to the early lead and say, here I am, try to catch me, because it seems like at Churchill Downs this week, nobody has caught any of the leaders who have been running on the main track. So the horses coming from California are pretty much front runners, and among them would be Hot Rod Charlie, a name that's easy to root for, who won the Louisiana Derby, but he's based in California. Medina Spirit for Bob Baffert. And Bob Baffert usually comes in with horses that loom as big favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Medina Spirit's 15-1, Bob Baffert, but this is a horse that also goes to the early lead, and I have a feeling he's going to have something to say about it at 15-1. Another horse not from California, Midnight Bourbon, and what Tennessean doesn't love Midnight Bourbon?
True.
Also a horse that runs up front early, finished second to Hot Rod Charlie in Louisiana his last time out. I would pay attention to him, and you're going to get a price on him too, because Midnight Bourbon is 20-1 right now.
You're listening to Barry Abrams, longtime press row horse racing guru. You can check out his tips on Daily Wager, ESPN's Daily Wager, and ESPN Plus. He also has a daily one-minute commentary on thoroughbred racing called The Far Turn. Barry, I saw where Essential Quality, the 2-1 favorite, drew the 14th post. Rock Your World, who's next, right, at 5-1, drew the 15th. I would assume that's where you need to focus your eyes out of the gate, because is it often that you have the two favorites side by side?
Well, I was going to save Rock Your World for a little bit later, because I think he's going to win the race.
Ooh.
I don't think it's so much favorites necessarily being side by side that matter, but running styles. And Rock Your World is going to be another horse from California that goes to the early lead. He has been basically almost all turf, running on grass his first two starts, but his trainer John Sadler said, let's take a shot on a dirt race, and he won the Santa Anita Derby going away, and he's got the hottest jockey in the country, Joel Rosario, on him. Essential Quality is probably going to follow him for most of the first, let's say, three quarters of the race. So I think Essential Quality's happy, his connections are happy to be near Rock Your World, follow him, have him as a target, and then try to chase him down. I just don't think Essential Quality is going to chase him down. I think Rock Your World is the best horse in this race, and I think he wins it.
Hmm. All right, and I saw this stat. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Ferdinand in 1986 is the only Derby winner in the past 50 years to win while starting next to the rail. Known Agenda is next on the favorite list. I mean, when they draw these posts and you get right next to the rail, do these owners just like break down because there's so little success of winning this thing next to the rail?
Well, it's certainly not what they want. The rail is a little bit less of an issue nowadays, and the reason for that is because the starting gate is different. For all two of you who watched the Derby last year, because it was the first weekend of college football, you would have seen a new starting gate, and the new starting gate has 20 stalls side by side, whereas in the past, there were two gates.
Right.
Because usually you only have a 14-horse gate, and then you got to add another gate for the last six.
Okay.
And what that did, among other things, was the start of the Derby is at the very, very, very top of the home stretch. And when they break out of there, they're basically joining up with the final turn of the racetrack. So the horse coming from the rail, all of a sudden, one jump out of the gate has some daylight on his left because he's in the middle of the final turn. But that rail then comes up quickly, maybe three or four jumps out of the gate, and that horse has to find a way not to crash into it, which obviously compromises his chances. Now, Churchill has instituted a new gate, one gate that has 20 stalls in it. So the horse going out of the one is not nearly as far over as he used to be. It's still not where you want to be, because if you don't establish a good position near the front, then the field is going to come right around you and swarm you and box you in, and you'll have nowhere to go. But at least you're going to be a little further out where you don't have to alter course very much because the rail is about to, you know, swarm you.
All right, Barry, you mentioned the two of you that watched last year because of college football. I know you like the NFL. How often does Derby Saturday and day three of the NFL draft intertwine? That can't happen often, but I guess it does due to the calendar.
It's happening more in the last, like, 3 or 4 years. And it stinks for us who care about covering the Derby on ESPN because we can't have as many features, as many guests, because SportsCenter just doesn't want as much when the NFL draft is happening. But it's been, I'd say, the last 2 or 3 years. It used to be a little bit earlier in April, the draft. Now it's been pushed back to the end of April, early May. And some of us would hope that they would move the draft a week or two ahead so it's not a conflict.
You're listening to Barry Abrams wrapping things up here in the next couple of minutes, the longtime press row horse racing guru here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. You mentioned the crowd at 25. I've seen it as high as 30, but I'm just kind of curious, Barry, are there any stories about competition for tickets? Is this a hot ticket to this thing, given that there's so few?
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly seen online people, you know, paying big money for tickets because there aren't that many. I don't know exactly how all of that works. But yeah, I mean, it's the Kentucky Derby at the time the Kentucky Derby traditionally happens. And people want to go. And now that people are vaccinated, they theoretically can go. But still, the governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, you know, for a while wasn't going to let any spectators in here. It really hasn't been that long since Churchill worked out even having 25 to 30,000. So, you know, there certainly is competition. And what there also will be, to a lesser extent, and this is one of the things that happens every year that is just so cool, is that local high school kids who play sports or, you know, are on the chess team or whatever, they can do fundraisers for their schools by volunteering to clean up the garbage. And Churchill will pay them, and that goes into their team, you know, funds so they can go to travel games and things like that. So obviously there won't be 150,000 and there won't be as many high school kids cleaning up, but there will be some people and there will be some kids cleaning up who will be able to pay to go to away games because they have money from these fundraisers, which is just so cool.
All right, closing with a couple of questions about the horses. Barry, when we first had you on, Affirmed in 1978 was the most recent Triple Crown winner. We've since had American Pharoah and Justify. You say you like Rock Your World to win Saturday. How is he set up for the Triple Crown if he is to win Saturday?
Gosh, you're making me feel old. Rock Your World has only run three times, and only... all of them this year. He did not run as a two-year-old, and Justify was the first in 130-some years to win the Derby without having run at age two. but he has some seasoning. So I don't know whether he can win the Triple Crown. Obviously, this is in many ways the toughest race to win because of all the traffic. There's 20 horses here. But if he does, you know, the tighter turns at Pimlico definitely lend to a horse that can quickly turn, quickly accelerate in the lane. And a horse that runs on turf quickly accelerates in the lane. And Rock Your World has this very high knee action. He runs like, if you've ever worked out in a gym and the instructor or someone on your home video says, come on, knees up, let's go. That's how he runs. He runs with his knees really high. So I don't know how it works for him, but that's what he does. Imagine running a mile and a quarter that way. So if he gets past this one with that knee action, I think he's going to have a pretty quick turn of foot in the Preakness. Nobody knows about running a mile and a half in the Belmont, because that is something these horses are just not bred to do. But let's get there first.
Okay. And then you say you like Rock the World. You're on record for that. Give us a horse that nobody's talking about that you think has the potential of that top three or four finish.
Well, Dynamic One for Todd Pletcher. Todd Pletcher has four horses in this race. Dynamic One looked like he was going to be the winner at the most recent race in New York, the Wood Memorial. He was overtaken by a long shot, and so nobody's really talking about him, saying, well, if he was overtaken by a long shot, how good could he be? But he is training like a monster in Kentucky. Everything I've seen of him, this horse just gleams every single time I've seen him. I don't know if he's going to win, but he's got a tremendous jockey in Jose Ortiz, comes from a great barn in Todd Pletcher, and, you know, he definitely has been getting better every time out. Is he good enough? We'll see, but he's giving all the signs of running a big race, and he's 20-1.
Barry, again, you always deliver. I don't know if anybody's got a higher success rate of delivering when they come on Press Row than Barry Abrams. Barry, we always appreciate it, your insight. And look, if there's again, we're not going to put, we're not going to rush things, but if we've got a Triple Crown potential, you know, we're going to ring you again.
You know where to find me, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
All right. Great job, Barry. Barry Abrams, our longtime horse racing guru. 648-1051 is the number. Back with more. You're listening to Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.